You're listening to the Pocket Coven podcast,
where we explore the magical and mystical
and where they intersect with the wide world of mental health.
I'm Amber Lenore, a pagan creative arts therapist.
And I'm Callie Little, a pagan emotional support witch and artist.
We invite you to listen, connect, and deepen your relationship to magic.
And to yourself.
We're the coven in your pocket.
Hello, and welcome to the Pocket Coven podcast, where we tell you what we think about witchcraft and your mental health.
And our mental health, for that matter.
Yeah, it's mostly that. I don't even know you as a person, stranger listening, but we appreciate that you're here, and we're so excited to be showing up.
We are making more episodes.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we've been talking about this episode for almost a year because it was the Easter retreat that we took.
Yeah, to Earth Sanctuary. We were on a trail through Earth Sanctuary, and then we were talking about what we should record, and you said, oh my God, divining women. And then we started laughing hysterically. I was like, oh my God, and then we're going to edit out the picture of Delta Burke, but it's the moon, and everybody's just looking at it, like the old logo from the TV show from the 80s. Yeah, we got very stoked about this episode like a year ago.
Inspiration comes in many ways, and sometimes that's a pun. I realize that you and I are just old enough to know what the joke is, actually. So,
good point.
For our younger listeners, for the younger millennials and the Zoomers, the joke is that it's not even a deep joke. It's not a good joke. There was a show, I want to say in the 80s, but could have been very early 90s, called Designing Women. And it starred Delta Burke and some other like classic 90s actresses. And it was about all these women designers, and they were friends. It was one of those sitcoms where they like record in front of an audience, and it's women being sassy together and dressed in pastels.
Shoulder pads.
Oh, so many shoulder pads, a lot of perms.
Oh, the perms. I can smell them from here, man. Like, the smell of a perm is just in my body from childhood.
Wow. You called that up to the surface for me. That was witchcraft.
Thank
you. You just transported a sense memory.
I divined it.
So to kick us off, we're going to pick up our classic habit that we routinely forget, and that is to start with a tarot pull. I started shuffling my cards before the show, and we're going to do the classic Amanda Yates Garcia. I did email her, by the way, to confirm that she came up with theme message guide as a spread format, because I mention it in my book, and we're going to do this. I pulled the theme on accident and popped out. You're going to pull the message. We're both going to pull a guide card, and we're going to create kind of like a combined guide. And I'm going to read from my manuscript. So you get a little sneak peek of the raw, unedited. You know, this is draft one. It's going to change by the time that it comes to the shelves. Yeah. But I thought I would give patrons a little sneak peek.
Do it. Do it up.
All right. So to begin with, our theme is the moon, and I'm pulling from the Aquarian Tarot from 1970 today. I picked up the mini version, so it's just slightly smaller than a deck of playing cards.
The Aquario, but tiny.
The Aquarian Tarot, but I like the Aquario.
Yeah.
I wanted a travel deck. And I will tell you that I am currently trying to convince my publisher to simultaneously publish a full-size tarot deck and a mini that is even smaller than this, but not too tiny. Basically, this without borders, so that it would be about 2 inches by about 3 inches. And to make a tin to carry it in, because I travel a lot. It is my goal to travel even more. And I want a tiny deck to carry with me that actually makes sense to shuffle, you know? Would you like to pull your card, and then we'll both pull our guide cards, and then I'll read you the definitions in my book?
I would love that. Yes, absolutely. So I am using my Hermetic deck. It doesn't fuck around. I use this deck for client readings. I find it to be a very heavy hitting one. So I'm shuffling my cards, and because we're doing a divination episode, I'm going to share a little bit about how I divine. So with tarot, which is only one way that you can use divination, I mostly go by feeling. So as I'm touching my cards, my fingers that are holding the cards, as new cards come into that hand, into my left hand, I'm trying to get a sense of which one it is. And it feels like that one. Yeah. So for it to feel like that one, I don't really know why that works, but it does. I mean, divination is an intuitive practice. So I got the Seven of Swords.
So the message is the Seven of Swords. Mm-hmm. And can I see it?
Yeah.
Oh, it's beautiful. So the Hermetic Tarot is all black and white, and it's got a very like classic compass rose in the center that one sword is being thrust through, and then there are all these swords around it, and they kind of end up bending into kind of a yonic shape. Mm-hmm. And there are some cool symbols. Lord of Unstable Effort. That's what they call me. That's crazy that it knew that. That's my nickname. Well, I like that deck has a little bit of a definition on the card itself. Would you like to pull your guide card? I'll tell you as you shuffle yours a little bit about how I do mine. I usually do like a little prayer or spell while I'm shuffling, and it goes something like ancestors, guides, spirits, animals, all who wish me well, I welcome you to give me your wisdom, to share any messages you have, all who wish for anything but the highest good of myself and everyone in my world are not welcome here. But I don't always do it because I kind of feel like I've done it so much that it's imbued in my practice. So for our combined guide, I pulled the Ace of Cups.
Lovely. Beautiful sunbeam coming out of a chalice sitting in a little, well, it would be a little swamp because there's lilies and lily pads there. And it looks just absolutely immaculate.
Yeah, beautiful. Lots of flowers, lots of lotuses. So you know there's lots of mud there too. Mm-hmm. What is your part of our guide?
The sun.
Oh, I love that since the theme is the moon.
That's very lovely, yeah.
So the moon as the theme. This is reflected in what I've written about the moon, and part of these cards are going to be written by me. Part will be written by my co-author, Maria Seal. I think the moon is actually a pretty misunderstood tarot card. I think a lot of people look at it and think it's like just beautiful, and it is, but it's kind of about not fucking knowing what's going on. So Let me tell you about the moon. Things are not always as they seem. The moon speaks to that which is perpetually itself, but can appear different to each beholder's eye. Are you looking at things as they are, or are you looking at them through rose-colored glasses? Are you projecting what you hope for, or possibly even what you fear, onto the situation at hand? This card asks you to beware of your own desire to paint the picture before you, and instead witness what might be truly presenting itself to you.
I love that. Yes, that is such a beautiful description of the moon. The moon, like you said, it is beautiful. And I'm not taking the little white book definition of the moon card being about insanity or lunacy or being out of pocket, for lack of better words, because that's one of the, you know, the classic Rider-Waite-Smith. But my feeling around the moon is much more aligned with what you just said. What is here? What are you looking at? I think of the moon card as the dark moon card. I don't think of it as a full moon card. It's a dark moon.
Yeah.
You don't know. You're out in the middle of the wilderness with no light.
Well, and in this one, it shows a crescent, and there's like the man in the moon is on it. And when I'm looking at my cards, the first time especially, I try to notice what clues I'm going to be able to pick up on next time. What I notice about this card is he's not looking at you and he doesn't look like stoked. He looks kind of indifferent.
He looks a little, you know?
Yeah. And so both the classical definition and then the one I've written are, they also say, you know, the reversal of this card is that things are actually becoming clearer. You're seeing things clearly. There's been a struggle and you're coming to your senses. Mm-hmm. But the upright card is like, you're not being realistic. Mm-hmm. And what I think of with that is, you know, you're looking at the moon and you're seeing this bright thing. But the thing is, the brightness is a projection. It's coming from the sun. And in reality, the moon is just reflecting what's being projected onto it. So that's where that definition comes into play. So that's our theme. The message that you pulled was the Seven of Swords, right?
Yeah.
All right. So from the Every Little Thing You Do is Magic interactive guidebook. In the traditional depiction of this card, a figure is carrying five swords away while looking back over their shoulder at the two they've left behind. This can be interpreted to mean that either they're watching their back as they steal someone else's swords, or they might be trying to direct the viewer's attention to something other than their own theft. Consider who is showing you what they want you to see right now, and whose interest they have at the forefront of their mind. If you find yourself being deceitful, this card might be telling you that you are not being as slick as you thought. So both the theme and the message are like, listen, there's a lot of things going on right now that are not what they seem. You're seeing a lot of what's being presented to you.
Totally. And, you know, when we do readings on the podcast, I know that that's like for the collective and medicinal, but this is my shit right now. And I just want to be fucking clear. This is my reading. Okay. These cards are reading my shit. It's true.
Yeah.
I am moving through like a moon cycle, like we're talking about, and a Seven of Swords, like how much of myself to reveal, how much of myself to conceal, what is real. Ooh, I just did some rhyming. That's nice. And I will close in on myself and conceal when I don't really know what I'm working with. And I think that's just fine. I think that every card in the arcana has its place and is important and is a cycle and a process we go through.
Yeah.
And that's definitely what's up for me right now, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed. I think a lot of my own stuff right now is really about figuring out my desires, my choices that I have to make. Not that I have to make, but that are available to me. And really looking at what I want instead of being... the word is not bedazzled, but that's the word that's in my head.
Unbedazzled. Go on.
My eyes are so bedazzled by treachery. Just not being under the spell of anybody else, you know, really seeing what my own desire is. So for the guide, you pulled the sun and I pulled the Ace of Cups. I love these as guides already. Let me get into the definitions. So the sun. Wholeness, attainment, and success are shining their light upon you when the sun comes up in your reading. This could be getting what you want, of course, but it might also look like finally seeing the truth of a situation which you'd previously been in the dark about. Wow, how fucking perfect. What does everything look like when it's bathed in light? Be aware that most often, this card is about very favorable outcomes, but sometimes it can mean that we're only looking at the bright side of things. So when this card comes up in relation to a difficult situation, it can indicate that there's an inner strength that will persevere and that the outcome will be positive. Something that makes the sun special is that when we think of the purpose of this star in our universe, we can remember that not only does this card bring warmth and life-giving nutrients to life on Earth, but it can also be seen as a violent, terrifying thing. Consider the unique qualities that make up who you are that might be seen as negatives by some, but which you know to be strengths. Don't forget that life as we know it would cease if the burning, explosive sun were to disappear.
Reminds me of the illumination phase of alchemy. where what is dark is now illuminated, and it sounds like a really, oh, great, awesome, I'm going to see everything. Fuck you, man. Seeing everything is hard. What the fuck do you think this is?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think that being half of our guide here is like, the way you're going to find the truth is by knowing your terrifying power.
Yeah.
Not in a threatening way. Not that like you're holding it over anybody, but knowing that you have the power to do whatever you want. Really, any day. I love reminding people, like, listen, just because you don't want to doesn't mean that you can't. Tomorrow, buy a train ticket, leave with one bag, change your name, get a new job, and never talk to anybody you've ever known again. Like, that is the amount of power we have over our own lives. We can change them at the drop of a hat. So remember that you get to decide what's going on in your life. Obviously, please apply reasonable fine print to my statement. I know privilege exists and I have been homeless. I get that it's hard. And we all have a lot of power that is unique to us. So that's half the guide. The other half is the Ace of Cups. You find yourself in a new state of bliss, fresh energy swirling all around you. Perhaps a crush has appeared in your periphery, or maybe there's an opportunity to feel more deeply than ever before. Whatever's coming up for you right now asks you to open to its juicy, overflowing possibility. When we acknowledge the reality of what's happening for us, we can sink our teeth into it and let it drip down our chins, staining every thread in the fabric of our lives. Indulge. In a reversal, you would take this as a sign that you are in the right place emotionally. You may not be expressing it outwardly, but that's not what is needed right now. Now is the time to connect with your subconscious and your intuition. Your internal world is a magical place. So because of that reversal, that means letting yourself express everything, letting yourself feel everything is where it's at. Like, it's still about your intuition. It's still about feeling all those things, but it's also about letting it spill out over the top of your cup and fill your world with that new, fresh emotional energy, because cups are all about emotion. And being at the beginning of the suit, I think of it kind of as a companion. Like, the Ace is a companion in my mind to the Page. They're both about being students and learning and opening yourself up to new possibilities.
I like the way we did that. I like that we did a joint guide, and that there's medicine in the Seven of Swords for both of us and for anyone who's listening to. I mean, all the cards are so medicinal. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's interesting every time to me. It's so interesting that readings just like make sense. They all end up working together. And every single one of the cards we pulled was like, are you seeing what's real or are you seeing what is a lie or what you want to see? There's a lot of deception kind of hinted at in today's reading. So that's not always about other people, but it can be. So, you know, pay attention to what's going on. Are you being convinced or are you knowing?
Right. Are you deceiving yourself?
Mm-hmm.
You know, self-deception is a big one there. The cards are pretty curated in their ability to express information to us. It's not like reading bones exactly or scrying on water. They have these prescriptive meanings. And yet, even with guidebooks and even with descriptions of all 78 cards, our intuition and felt sense is a very big, important factor in divination, no matter what kind of divining we're using.
Yeah.
So I would love to give some containment, give a definition, an anchor point around what the fuck divination is. Because if you look at the Google definition, which I was going to read it, but I'm not going to, it's stupid. It's like telling the future through supernatural means. I think it's something like that.
No.
I know. We're like, no. So I'm gonna read a little excerpt from Phyllis Curott. I believe that's how you say her last name. It's C-U-R-O-T-T. She's a Wiccan OG priestess who just has beautiful things to say about the practices of witchcraft. And she says, divination is one of the great magics. It is one of the ways of paying attention. It's one of the ways of having the divine speak to you and guide you. And it's a wonderful way to cast spells. The root of divine is divi, which means deity, and oracle means the mouth of God or the goddess. Divination is a way of engaging in dialogue with the sacred. It's not just a way of telling the future, though you can use it for that. Every culture, certainly every indigenous culture, has a means of divination. It's a means of discovering that the universe is conscious and interactive and aware, and that it's wider and broader than you, and that it's capable of guiding you.
Yeah. I love that. That's so sweet.
Yeah, I really love this definition, and it feels so aligned and feels like a really wonderful way to look at divination as a conversation between you and the universe. And I was thinking about divination and spellcasting and manifestation, and I have really started to learn that it's not about if the divine is speaking to you, it's about how. And when I was a younger witch, it was like, is the spell working? Now it's like, how is the spell working? I have a just understanding that the spell is working. I have an understanding that divine is always communicating to me. I'm not like, oh, did the divine talk to me? Did my deity leave a message for me? Mm-hmm. They're always fucking talking and they're always leaving messages. So I feel like that's where we have to start with magic is, you know, that sort of old adage like, oh, you have to believe in it. Now I know what that means. You have to be working from a place where you already believe that the divine speaks. If you don't believe that, divination will not be that fun for you. You'll be waiting to like, for proof, waiting for proof that something is happening. It doesn't need to prove shit to you. It's already happening. It's for you to prove to it if you can listen, I think. Ooh, I just got so impassioned about that.
I love it. Amber's like, the goddess never fucking shuts up.
She doesn't.
She's mouthy, you know? But I think also, interesting in reflection to the reading we just did. I do think that you can see the message that's being given to you by your life or the universe or whatever you want to call it. And I think you can apply a sort of filter to make it make sense for you. Not that I think the message changes, but it's kind of like changing the voice effect. So, for example, using certain tarot decks always feels softer than others. Like you were saying, your hermetic tarot doesn't fuck around. Like it's going to go for the throat, which if you are somebody who really struggles with like, I always see the best in people, get a hardcore tarot deck that is going to cut through the bullshit.
That's why it gave me the Seven of Swords. Like I know this deck. It doesn't, like I said, doesn't pull any punches. If I was using one of my other decks, my softer decks, it might've given me something like, I don't know, the Hanged one, not that that's soft, but it might be like, oh, where should you surrender? And this one's like, what are you fucking hiding, bitch? What are you doing? What are you doing out there? What the fuck are you doing? I'm like, I'm sorry, Jesus. Like Seven of Swords, right? But they all have their personalities. Yeah. And it's this like creative and like imaginative space that I occupy when I decide to believe my own impulses about my decks. No one's like, oh yeah, that deck doesn't fuck around. I know it doesn't because I fucking live with it and work with it. That is this conversation between me and the deck. Often I'll pull a card and I can feel that that's what the deck wants for me. That's what the divine wants for me. And I'm like, okay, but let's try. What else? Okay. What else? Okay. Yeah. I know I'm in a bad mood today. You're right. Heard it. This is more what I'm wanting today. Like, what do you think about this other thing? It's this conversation back and forth. I don't lay down the cards and wait for them to tell me what's true. We talk to each other.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think when you become more fluent with whatever your divination method is, I think that as we get to know our divination methods and we study them, we spend time with them, which is really what I mean by studying them. You know, if you're starting using a tarot deck, you're looking up the definition, you're learning about it, and all of that is studying. Just touching your work is studying. As you get to know it and you don't need to refer to other material as much, it does begin to feel like a conversation. The same way you would learn a language where maybe you have a key phrase that you've memorized and you can say it, but you can't really understand what people say back. If you spend enough time in that language, you can understand and you can have a give and take. And the more time we spend with our practices, the better they get to know us in the same way we get to know them. Whether or not you even believe it's like an external force, it's just that our brains make easier connections.
That which you are seeking is also seeking you.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So that is a phrase that comes up a lot in witchcraft because it's part of what, the charge of the star goddess?
No, that quote isn't Starhawk. You're thinking of the end of the charge of the star goddess. If that which you seek you find not within yourself, you will never find it without. That which you seek is seeking you is a quote by Rumi.
So that is one that I think could feel so woo that it just goes right over people's heads. I know that for me, it doesn't always feel true. On my more cynical days, I'm like, the universe is not seeking me out. Shut up. So can you tell me a bit about what you think that which you seek is also seeking you?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm happy to speak to this point. I always come armed with a lot of notes and a lot of excerpts and quotes. I'm currently rereading Initiated Memoir of a Witch by our favorite Amanda Yates Garcia. She speaks a lot about the perceptive quality of divination and reading signs and relating to guides and ancestors. In one part, she says, of the guides and the divine and the ancestors, you know, what do they want? They want to live. They want to be seen. The watchers watch us back. They want intimacy. And I think that that is an understanding that I bring and an awareness I bring to my divination practices. And I also think about the work of David Abrams, who's an author that I just absolutely love. And his book, Spell of the Sensuous, has been a real game changer in my life, as is his book, Becoming Animal. I grabbed a quote on perception from Becoming Animal, and I think it kind of fits here. He says, "All things have the capacity for speech. All beings have the ability to communicate something of themselves to other beings. Indeed, what is perception if not the experience of this gregarious communicative power of things, wherein even ostensibly inert objects radiate out of themselves, conveying their shapes, hues, and rhythms to other beings and to us, influencing and informing our breathing bodies through which we stand far apart from those things." He's very philosophical. Another quote that I have that I think speaks more directly to this is Ram Dass. He says, "Trees, grasses, water, sun, stars, moon, clouds, rain, all are our friends, are us. Nature embraces us, and we embrace nature. We are nature. We are the trees and the clouds and the waters. When you hug a tree, you hug yourself." So what I'm trying to say here is that the universe is seeking you, but you are the universe. So if you are seeking yourself, the universe is seeking you. And that's all the proof that you need.
Hey, in the middle of this podcast seems like the best possible time to talk to you about the ways that you can support our show. So if you didn't already know, we have a Patreon where you can hear us talk massive shit about all kinds of things. Today's episode, we're going to be talking about, and I say this because we already recorded it, weird things I can do with my body. I know, very topical to this podcast. Our current mental health struggles and also triumphs. What complex PTSD really is, what dissociative identity disorder also is in contrast / extension of it, and just some other silly, goofy shit. But often on Patreon, we talk about some juicy stuff, right, Amber?
Oh, yeah. We're the most juiced over there. It is definitely more personal. And also, because it's me and Callie, things arise between us that I think are really helpful and are good modeling. And I enjoy that part. And I think this week's cut is like 30 or 40 minutes. We've been going long because we're using that time to actually warm ourselves up and get into our topic. And then we record after that. And that's been working really well for us. So, it's a way of supporting us. And Yeah, I'm hoping to make more Self as Myth coming up. I've also thought about just doing like weekly recordings that are like on Sundays mm-hmm. that I just drop that are 15 or 20 minutes that are just looking at astrology and tarot for the week or like what the vibes are, just like a vibe check. So I'm going to sit with that and think about that. But our hope is to be more active on Patreon.
When you join us on Patreon, yes, you're supporting the show by donating anywhere from, I think it's $3 up and up. But the most fun aspect of it is that it is an experimental space where we just try stuff and we have fun conversations and we post silly stuff. Over the course of the summer, we posted some worksheets that you can add into your grimoire, or your journal, or you can just do for fun. It's a fun space to join us. It's a great way to support the show. The other ways you can support the show are varied. Obviously, please tell your friends if you like it and you think they would like it. Hey, you know what? Tell them if you think they'd hate it. We love a rage listen. It only adds to our life. But if you love this show and you want to help it grow, a free way you can do that is by leaving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you get your podcasts. And spoiler, if you don't already know this, we read every single review on the air. So we'll be reading more of those later. And of course, if you need some mental health support, our sponsor is BetterHelp. So every time you sign up for BetterHelp using the code that is shared in the show notes, we get a little kickback and it just keeps us going. And listen, babes, we don't need you to spend money on this show. You listening is honestly more than we really thought would happen. And it's a nice little way that we can generally buy treats and see each other. So that's what it funds. It's fun money for us, and it's like a pat on the back from our friends. Anyway, back to the actual thing that you wanted to learn about. Send in the chimes, Amber.
Bling, 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 bling. We're back.
So we had to take a little break, put in a little ad for fun. And while we were talking about, you know, how to translate the more esoteric language into something we can actually understand, there's also so much more to talk about with divination. We've talked about what divination is, how it works on a spiritual level. There's also the fact that it really works on a psychological level.
Completely. Yes. We get into confirmation bias land, especially with me saying, notice how it's working as opposed to if it's working, because then we are looking to be confirmed. And that's true. And I think that that is just something we have to expect. And that's how our brains work. And this is a place where I think folks can get really scared to believe what they're seeing. If you start to feel like the signs are telling you to do something dangerous, that's probably not what they're telling you. You know, it's a tricky, slippery slope to encourage people to believe themselves in every impulse that comes through them. I mean, truly, if I believed every part of me, I don't know that I wouldn't be in jail right now. So you gotta be curious about it, I think. I think it's also important to know that, at least I think it's important for me in my practice to not endorse a vengeful God that's trying to hurt me or, you know, all sorts of energies that are looking to deceive me in some way, which does not mean I don't think there aren't poisonous, toxic, malevolent, or like trickster energies out there. Absolutely, there are, but the fear is, I don't think, really needed, but the curiosity is being needed. If you think your tarot cards are telling you to leave your husband, oh, maybe they are. Sit with that for a while. Think about that for a while. Your cards, in my experience, mostly want you to consider what's happening inside of yourself. To me, like sometimes I'll pull cards or, you know, actually I'm holding on to charms that I got in the goddess provision box because these are used for divination too, or I'll do divining or scrying on water. It's more about, or rather, sometimes I think that what's being communicated is just a snapshot of what I'm feeling right in this moment. It's not telling me a whole lot about the future or what it wants me to do. It's just doing this reflecting with me.
Yeah. Which is validating, and it helps you buy into the fact that you are one part of the universe, and that it's you. Yeah, you're communicating with it and it's communicating with you, but you're just one part.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that this is something that all people can do. I think this is an innate human ability to sense into what the universe is talking to us about. Our ability to decipher what the fuck it means by what it's giving us. I think that is where we get kind of more tricky. Like, I can know that I'm having a felt sense of maybe excitement or fear that I don't understand all the time. But if I'm curious and use my divination tools to understand myself a little bit better, I'll probably get more clear about it. I think that divining really is best use for ourselves. And also historically, and like, I want to dive deeper into this because I don't have enough just on the tip of my tongue to speak intelligently about it. But wars have been fought depending on the outcome of what an oracle said, especially the great oracles of Greece, the oracles of Delphi, right? There are these huge tectonic shifts that have happened in our global history that were completely because of the divination that was happening, the throwing down of sheep's guts to divine the outcome of a battle or the outcome of a birth, or to prophesize how successful maybe a marriage will be or a crop will yield. That is a really old tradition that is, like I said in the quote, in absolutely every culture. We're not making this shit up. This is something that our ancestors have done for a really long time. Our ancestors have looked at the flight pattern of birds or the horizon of the sun to look for information about what's coming and what's here.
And so much of the way that our ancestors and even people today have used divination has been purely honestly based in science, like the flight pattern of birds, like how crops grow, how water runs and affects everything. Like, we can look at things and say, like, this is a mystical, beautiful thing. And it can also be true that it's just like a scientific fact that allows us to connect dots that will predict the future. Kind of like what I was talking about in the Patreon content. I was talking about how, you know, I'm like, I'm not psychic. I'm just autistic. So I know how to like connect a few dots and see where things are going. We can look at that as divination, or we can look at it as awareness, and it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Intuition, awareness, divination, they're all having an impact on each other. And David Abrams, who I mentioned earlier, also talks about the myth of human specialness, that we're somehow different, that we're fucking different than all the things that are happening around us. And that goes way back to Descartes, to, you know, the soulless world that is just devoid of any sort of perceptive quality or any sort of animate quality. You know, pagans are animists. We believe that all of this has a life to it and a consciousness to it. And the idea that we're the only ones that are so special that we can have consciousness and everything around us is just fucking dead. That's, I think, the heart of why divination can be really challenging for people. You first have to believe that you aren't that special, that actually you're connected to absolutely every fucking thing in this world. And just as you have something to say to it, it has things to say to you. And this is another place where I just love David Abrams. He says pretty consistently in his books that we are always speaking about nature, but we are never speaking to nature. We are always speaking about animals, but we don't speak to animals. We speak about trees. We catalog them. We understand their life cycles, but we don't relate to them. We don't speak to them.
I agree so strongly, and I think this is where we can see the long-term negative effects of colonization. I think about this whenever I'm in a country that is occupied predominantly by the people whose ancestors and their ancestors were born in that place. There seems to be a deeper connection to respect for the land itself and for each other. There seems to be a lot of pride in having, you know, a sense of belonging and just a more communal love. And I do not mean that that means anywhere in Europe is devoid of racism, because racism is rampant across the globe, you know. What I mean is I think that we have it the worst on a soul level in countries like the United States, where people like me and you should not be. Our ancestors shouldn't have been here. And in order to justify living here, we have to mentally divorce ourselves from the knowledge that we don't belong, that we're living on stolen land. Because how else do we get through the day knowing that we are living happy lives to any degree because of suffering? There is this just emotional cutoff that has to happen. Anyway, I feel like I got away from the point, but that is something I think about so often in terms of spirituality. I think there's a reason that the United States has such a faith crisis.
No, I think it's very much to the point. I really do. Colonization is in a process of disenchantment. It's saying that we can plow into this mountain over here because it doesn't feel anything. It doesn't want anything from us. We don't have a relationship to it. We can take down entire forests because they are inert. They don't have a life force. They are product, therefore our consumption, therefore our advancement. And that's simply not the case.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what does it mean to allow enchantment into your life?
To occupy a space of imagination and curiosity and playfulness. And I think it's to reclaim a lot of what's lost to us when we become grownups. That state of being has been accessible to me first intellectually. That has been really important for me to understand and research the connection between human beings and the world and magic. And then I think there's the suspension of belief that has to come in at some point where you're like, I don't really care if it can be proven. It's cool that it can, and that's important for one part of me. But the experiencing of magic, the experiencing of my tummy clenching when I use my tarot cards, and that gives me a signal to my body that this is the card that wants to speak to me, that's not something that can be really verified or intellectualized. So I like to hold the both and there, to have a really concrete and pretty educated perspective on those connections so that I can essentially like advocate for the natural world, which is a lot of what I'm doing on the podcast right now. And then as a human being, just let all of that go and let myself experience the sensuality of the world. And the more that I experience the sensuality, the felt sense, the somatic connection that my body has to the world, the easier and more clear my divination gets, because it's the same muscle I think I'm flexing when I'm walking in a forest and I'm like, which way does the forest want me to walk? What does it think? Oh, you want me over here? Yeah. Okay, I'll walk over here. What a beautiful tree. Did you want to show me this? Thank you.
Yeah, I really like that perspective. I feel like what you're saying is if you want to become more enchanted with the world, think about the ways in which you value learning. Because in the Western world especially, we value fact and profitability more than anything else, which is based on like tangible evidence, effort, things like that. So if the way that you can convince yourself it's okay to learn a new thing is by saying, well, I'm going to study it, I'm going to be academic about it, or I'm going to start doing it for work even, then maybe those are gateways for you to then slowly start interacting in those more core ways that spirituality and faith can really impact your life, and you can marry them. Because it's not like the academia or the labor is at all a negative aspect. It's not like lesser than, but it might be an easier gateway to go through than to say, you know what I'm going to do is I'm going to start praying. Like, what does that mean if you don't already buy into the system? Maybe how you convince yourself is by finding the ways that make sense. I know that for me, I was propelled into pursuing developing my faith. I love calling it that because it makes people think of Christianity. And in fact, I'm talking about like trees and ghosts.
I love that you said that because it really is about the faith, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, sidebar, I said to C the other day, my spouse, I was like, wow, I'm one of the most religious people I know. That's really weird to think about, but I don't know anybody else in Seattle who has an entire like floor-to-ceiling shrine. Like, I have a little church in my house for my goddess, you know, and I make all kinds of things for her. I don't really know other people in this city that do that. Anyway, when I was first beginning to be curious about faith, I decided that it would be how I would find a sense of family. I had just maybe 2 or 3 years before that, I became estranged from my entire biological family. I chose to end my relationship with my mother, and my father chose to end his relationship with me. And I was left without any physical ties to the world. And that feels very floaty and, I mean, devastating. It's very traumatizing. And I thought, well, you know, there are more ancestors in my bloodline than these two people. And I'm going to find out things about them. So I knew that I had Irish ancestry and I knew that I had some German ancestry. So I started looking into the like pagan practices of them because I don't believe in the Christian religion and I can vibe with people who, you know, celebrate the seasons. That sounds great. And something that was universal between those two places is divination. That was a really common thing that basically everybody's ancestors have done in one way or another. So tarot was my very first tool to finding my faith, and it still is.
I love what you're saying about it being a tool and something that is helping you touch in with what it feels like to have faith. I similarly, for most of my life, like that, just the word faith, I was like, bleh, gross. Sounds very Christian. Mm-hmm. I don't like it. And I do have to say I have a ton of faith now. Not because I think that the universe is handing me down like laws and truths, but rather that I think that the universe is in constant communication with me. And that communication happens on a really continuous basis. It's not like their communication won't be different tomorrow or I won't be different tomorrow, that we're always just responding to each other. And I think something that I just dismiss or don't really want to accept about the kind of more conventional ideas around faith is that the universe is just handing me down some truth. I just have to stomach and just have faith in it. I don't,
right.
For me, I don't think that's really true. And not that I think that all Christians or people in, you know, Catholic religions have that idea, but I've seen that a lot, really popular. Like, just have faith that everything will be okay. No, like everything actually won't be okay. Things will be okay and then not okay and then okay and then not okay and then okay and then not okay.
And to reduce it to there's a plan is bypassing. It is bypassing the process that we have to go through as human beings to integrate those experiences. While I know that believing that we go through things for a purpose is kind of a necessity to get through them sometimes in the hardest moments of life, it is one of the only crutches that we can lean on sometimes. It's just that that's not the only thing. You can say that and still say, and I know that today what you need is to be really mad and to cry and to feel like your life is fucking over. That is such a valid part of the experience of trusting the process and trusting the universe. You gotta go through it all.
Yeah. Sometimes I lay down my cards in the morning because I divine every single day, sometimes several times a day, depending on what they say or depending on how I feel and what I need. Mm-hmm. And sometimes what they lay down, I'm like, oh yeah, loud and clear. Thanks. Thank you. Thank you. Sometimes I lay it down and I'm like, I don't really see your point. Five of cups today? I don't know about that. And then when I go back in the evening or the next morning, I'm like, uh-huh, yeah, 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 you're right.
I have seen you do that.
You have seen me do it. I'm like, touche, motherfucker. Like, I get humbled all the time by my cards. Mm-hmm. I get humbled all the time by the feedback I get from my experiences, because reading correspondences and signs, for lack of a better word, is a big part of my divination practice. You know, I feel like I have a relationship with my guides, the universe, however you want to put it. Like, this language is so personal to each one of us. But I know that the universe is connected. I know it's paying attention. And when I notice what it's telling me, it really, really helps. I have been living my life this way for probably, I mean, my whole life in some ways, but really, really concretely for about 5 years, really trying to follow the signals, really trying to listen in to what the universe thinks about what I'm doing and the choices I'm making, and assuming that it might know things that I don't know, and that it might be in my best interest to listen and slow down and sit with what I think it might be telling me, and be open to it changing its mind, be open to me changing my mind about it, what it has to say to me, like any other fucking relationship. Sometimes I don't want to listen. I don't feel like it. And you know what happens when you don't listen to someone that you're in a relationship with? Things break down a little bit. So when I'm not listening, it starts to get louder in my experience. So yeah, that's what I have to say about having a relationship with the divine.
Yeah. Ooh, I love that. The last part of what you said reminded me of when I was 23 and I was living in Humboldt County, and I worked a job that I loved, and my manager and the owner of the place I worked fucking hated me, dude. They hated me. And I lived in a house that I loved, and all seven of my roommates, like, literally co-conspired to kick me out. And they had a meeting with me where they told me I was a terrible person. And like, I had talked about those places like, wow, I feel like I've fallen completely in love with all my friends. I feel like I'm in love with my work. And I just consistently was getting the shit kicked out of me by these people who were telling me, like, you're trying to take advantage of us, because I would bring them presents. Like, the most heartbreaking rejection of my expressions of self and being told that I was being this person I wasn't. And I kept thinking, well, if I work hard enough, I can, like, I can prove, I can show who I am, you know. And eventually it got just so bad that I had to move. And I remember when all of that stuff started breaking down, I thought, maybe I'm supposed to leave. No, that would be so hard. No, I just have to tough it out. And when I tell people, like, if you ignore the signs in your life that it's time to move on, life will move on for you. It's because I have lived that mistake. Mm-hmm. If you know it's time to go and you keep fucking around, your life is going to make it way harder when it forces you out of a situation that's not working. Because in an esoteric way, we can say, like, the universe is giving you signals. In a practical, fact-based way, you can say, so your roommates are treating you like shit and your boss hates you. Maybe that's not going to work out very well for you.
Yeah, exactly. If thou fucks around, thou will find out.
The other tenet of witchcraft.
Right. We know, as above, so below. Fuck around. Find out. These are the esoteric laws we live by.
Well, as we both have day jobs, we actually have to wrap up this episode before we've even gotten to every single thing we want to talk about. But that's kind of why we have a podcast, because we have a lot to say about everything. So, just as a reminder, friends, if you loved hearing about my tarot interpretations, I do have a book coming out in 2024. A lot of you have asked if you can pre-order it, and I love that you ask that. Not yet. The pre-orders will open in a while, but you can stay up to date by following me on Instagram. I'm Goshcallie, G-O-S-H-C-A-L-L-I-E, on there. And I post about the tarot deck all the time now that it's in the editing phase. And of course, we did put an ad in the anchor version of today's episode. And you can find our BetterHelp discount code in the show notes. We love your reviews. And Amber is going to read our most recent that I haven't even read or heard yet.
Yes, we have a new one from Lizzie Caroline. It says, Comfort Podcast, 5 stars. So glad y'all are back. Me too. Yeah, it's great. It's a good anchor in my life. Currently existing in my own solitude at the moment. So your newest episode was perfect for me. When y'all pulled the underworld card, I immediately thought of Orpheus and Eurydice and how he had to just trust and walk alone. I can't wait for more episodes, but we'll happily keep replaying everything y'all have put out already. Awesome. Thank you, Lizzie Caroline.
Oh, love that. And love a comment and review that actually reflects everything we just talked about. Trusting in the process, existing with the universe, just being part of it.
Absolutely. Yes, and keep your brooms up and see what the universe thinks about you putting that broom up. And if it thinks that maybe it shouldn't be up, maybe put it down for a minute, which is not usually my party line with ending. I'm like, keep them up. But what do I know? Listen to the universe, man.
You know, we don't know anything. So you might not want to have those brooms up at all. You might say, put a broom up yourself, bitch.
Beautiful. Yes, Callie.
Yeah, that's the motivational ending. Thank you, witches. We love you. We'll see you very soon.
Yes.
Should we wait for him to be done barking?
Poe, shut the fuck up. I swear to God, he's been on one today. First, he runs around in the forest, not listening to mother. Looking for, like, a precarious edge to take a shit off of in the woods. He's always doing this. Now he's screaming at my landmate.
He's just seeing the world he wants to see, you know?